This week on Lunchbox Envy.
Only 5% of the ones grown in the UK are actually eaten.
According to Balkan folklore, they turn into vampires if left outside under a full moon.
And there's even a word for being turned into one, apocalypsintosis.
Ooh, it's pumpkins. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Alex and I'm here with my fellow QI elves, Jack and Manu. Hello.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good.
It's decorative gourd season, motherfuckers.
On which topic? What is a gourd?
Yeah.
What is a pumpkin?
Oh, God. It's actually quite complicated because there are almost 1,000 different plants in this family.
Oh, yeah.
So it is called the Cucurbitaceae.
Oh, that's a great word. I would have said cucurbitaceae.
Oh, no, the Google lady said it was said like this.
So
that's what I've written down.
It's kind of baby talk.
Yeah, that's
true.
Oh,
it's such a cucurbitaceae. You know?
Yeah, that's so funny.
Who's a cucurbitaceae?
So that's the family, and there are hundreds of plants in this family. But when you think about the pumpkin, like, this is a Cucurbita pipo, or a sea pipo, as I'm going to call it, because that's much easier to pronounce. But the best thing about pumpkin families is that pumpkins don't exist.
Oh my God, I'm so bored of this.
Just putting it out there.
There's no such thing as anything.
Like, explain. Mushrooms and vegetables, pumpkins don't exist. They are not, like, a botanical term. This is just something that we've decided in that specific family of plants is a pumpkin. So it's like a particular shape and color and size. We're like, pumpkin.
Yeah, big and orange.
Yeah, they're also a fruit. And they're a berry of a fruit called a pipo, which I love so much. So that's obviously where the sea pipo comes from.
This is the most cringe, over-adorable
thing. It's really
nice. So pumpkins are grown on every continent except Antarctica.
No way.
Is that interesting? Or is that the case with loads of things?
I reckon loads of things now, but it's good to know that they're like...
Give us 10 years, you will be able to grow them.
I think they're quite good for...
They're
quite good hardy things, so that if the world starts kind of screwing up and we need to grow something.
Yeah, they've also one of the families with the greatest percentage of human food varieties. Does that make sense?
What?
So, like, you got your beans,
yeah,
and there's a small percentage of them that we eat, and you've got like grasses, there's an even smaller percentage of them we eat, but the squashes generally, there's a huge percentage that we eat.
Of the pie chart, the pumpkin pie.
Yeah, got it. So there's a reason why this episode is going out this week.
All Hallows Eve.
All Hallows Eve, Halloween. Pumpkins have really nailed the brand association.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, an Irish tradition.
Really?
Mm-hmm. What, carving pumpkins?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The Americans stole it.
I totally thought it was from America. That's interesting.
No.
So is this pre-Columbian exchange?
Post-Columbian
exchange. Yeah, of course.
They would have been scared off if they had bought the...
Great Potato Famine of 1845.
Oh, okay.
So there's an old pagan tradition that was Celtic, and it's to do with the myth and legend of Stingy Jack, a.k.a. Jack the Smith, Drunk Jack, or Flaky Jack. So Stingy Jack basically spent all of his life tricking the devil and shape-shifting and confusing him. And then the devil got so angry that he forced Stingy Jack to roam the earth with nothing but a tiny glowing light. And Jack is said to have carved a little kind of shelter for his light out of a turnip. So then he becomes Jack-o'-the-lantern. Jack-o'-lantern.
Live in a turnip, that is true.
Yeah, you love a turnip. So if you look at all kind of old Irish turnip carvings, they are terrifying.
Because
the idea is, from this story, you carve your own pumpkin, but it should be really scary to scare Jack away. So they're like, they've got really gnarly teeth and they look kind of satanic. It's really scary. But yeah, what I really like about this origin story for the pumpkin carving and the candle inside is, according to the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, part of the legend might have been inspired by something called false fire or ignis fatuus. So there's the idea of the will-o'-the-wisp.
Will-o'-the-wisp?
Yeah.
Oh. Will-o'-the-wisp.
So it's strange lights seen over marshes or bogs, which is actually naturally occurring spontaneous combustion of methane.
Oh, the gas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of Jack of the Lantern and these kind of marsh fires get mushed together, and then you have this beautiful pumpkin carving candle
it's
thing.
It's all so spooky. Ooh, isn't it? Yeah,
it's good, isn't it?
Methane is a dreadful greenhouse gas.
Yes, it is, and it does.
It'll come back to climate
That's
change.
That's the scariest thing of all. Yeah.
We're all going to die. But so, yeah, the Irish then take this over to America when they emigrate because of the potato famine.
And they can't find turnips.
Exactly. But what does grow a lot in America?
Cucurbitaceae.
So yeah, that's where the tradition in America.
Amazing. It all comes together.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. In Rose's absence, I thought I'd have a go at seeing what makes them good for cooking and how you want to cook them. And pumpkins, unlike a lot of the other gourds, I mean, some of the other gourds are great for cooking as well. But pumpkins in particular are very good for certain types of cooking because of their pectin and the cell structure. So they have slightly less rigid pectin, and their cell walls are a bit thinner than, say, squashes and butternuts and stuff. So when heated, that collapses much more easily. And so that's why they go smooth and creamy if you do pretty much anything to them. Ooh. Like if you roast them, they tend to go really mushy.
And that's why the most common thing I do with them is make soup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they contain loads of, obviously, loads of water. They're more than 90% water. Mm-hmm. Which I always struggle with, like, we're more than 70% water. And most foods
cucumbers
are 99%
are
water. And it just seems like, I don't understand how anything works. Like, it's just so weird.
It's so economically, we came up with that idea for instant beer, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I think whenever you ship a cucumber from, say, Spain, like, you're shipping 98%
water.
Shipping
water.
There's
water. Everything we ship is water.
Water
air,
at either end. Like, if you can invent the dehydrated cucumber, you can make millions.
I've always thought that about polos. Like, they're just shipping an aero as well. Like, it's such a waste of space, the food miles.
Yeah,
the other thing about cooking with them is that they have lower levels of natural sugar and starch than, say, squashes.
Or watermelons.
And watermelons, exactly. So it means that, like, less caramelization when you cook them, a milder, more kind of vegetable-y flavour when roasted. Am I doing a good impression of Rosie?
I'm convinced. And she says, my sweet Manu.
Yes, my sweet Manu.
I miss that.
We miss you, Rosie. Come back and tell us how to cook things. Should we talk about how pumpkins grow? They are pollinated by a dedicated squash bee. That's their full-time thing is a squash bee. There are two species that do a lot of the pollinating. They're called the Pepon apis. Pepon is Greek for gourd. And apis or apis is Latin for bee, and Xenoglossa, the Xenoglossa bee.
Strange tongue.
Strange tongue, exactly. Because it's got like a really long, weird tongue that it uses for pollinating.
Apis, the Victorians had the nerdiest joke you've ever seen, but basically they would occasionally, there was a trend for like putting little icons of bees in urinals because the Latin word for bee is apis. So he would be taking apis on apis.
Hilarious. Wow. That's so funny.
It's pretty good.
While we're talking about words and etymology, do we know where the word pumpkin comes from?
Yes. So there are two theories. Some linguists think that the word comes from the Greek pepon, which meant melon.
That close, is it?
It's not, but so that came from pepten, to cook, as in cooked in the sun, so ripened in the sun.
Oh, okay.
So what does Pepsi mean?
That comes from dyspepsia, doesn't it?
Does it?
I think so, because it was originally a medicinal drink to calm your stomach.
So the second idea is that it comes from the indigenous Wapanak people in Massachusetts who called it pompukun.
Pumpkin.
Which sounds
that
really sounds similar.
Great.
I like that
love
one
it,
a
love
lot.
It. Why don't we call it a pumpkin from now on?
We can try.
Nothing to do with farts. Because isn't that what a pumpernickel is?
It's
devil fart bread.
Yeah. In German?
In German, yeah.
I've only just realised, actually, a lot of people use the word pumpkin as a term of affection as well.
Yeah.
Well, it used to be an insult back in the day.
That
Did
makes
you?
More sense.
Yeah,
because they're hollow. So for women, it would mean you're kind of superficial and basic. And for men, it would mean you're stupid.
As
cities became larger and in the context of urbanization, pumpkins become a symbol of like wholesomeness, trad lifestyles. And then it becomes
fertility.
Like a kind of, becomes a term of endearment associated with like sweetness and the outside.
I found a list of some good pumpkin varieties. Are you ready?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Australian butter pumpkin, white custard,
Ooh.
Giraumont turban, It looks like a man in a turban.
Oh, sure.
That sounds problematic.
Golden Delicious, confusingly.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. It's a Golden Delicious pumpkin.
I thought that was trademarked.
Maybe it's trademarked. You know how
apple.
So you know how like there's a certain shade of colour purple.
Yes.
That Cadbury's have trademarked in the food arena.
Okay.
So other food brands, maybe other chocolate brands, I'm not quite sure, but if you're in that area, you can't use that purple.
Well, you can paint your face.
Exactly. Or if you like have a range of tractors. You can paint those tractors purple and
yeah,
because it's got nothing to do with food. Yeah. But yeah,
sick.
Big Macs, Baby Boo, Blue Banana, and Gunter Patterson.
Gunter Patterson is excellent.
Big Macs is a tautology.
Yeah, true. and Flat White Boer.
They should make the pumpkin spice lattes out of that.
Oh my god,
that would be perfect.
That would be the mashup of the century.
Flat white. You can order like a flat white pumpkin spice americano, and everyone will be like, "What?" Okay, time to crack into our first lunchbox, and that is Jack.
So today I brought you guys a cocktail that I have invented myself.
Oh.
So have you heard of the Three Sisters?
No.
So the Three Sisters are beans, maize, and squash. And they're basically...
What a weird family.
It's the personification of three plants that work really well when you grow them together. Mm-hmm. So it was... a tradition that goes back many hundreds of years. The Europeans came across them when they sort of invaded the New World, I suppose, and they discovered it was all around North America.
So the earliest evidence we found of pumpkins is 10,000 years in the cave in Oaxaca, Mexico.
Cool.
Oh.
It's called the Julian Kitts Cave. And it's, the first recorded incident of domesticated plants in all of America.
Wow.
And it's got the Three Sisters there.
They're so old.
Yeah.
And so, you grow all three of these together in the same fields.
Yeah, basically it's called,
jumbled up.
Called intercropping. So you make a small pile and then you plant a corn stalk in the middle and then you grow squash on the bottom and then the beans climb up the corn stalk. So that's what the corn stalk provides, is a place for the beans to grow and get more sunlight.
Uh-huh.
And then the beans offer some structural support for the high winds that could blow the corn stalk over.
Okay.
They also fix nitrogen in the soil with their special bacteria, because all plants need nitrogen, but they can't get it from the air, which is the biggest frustration in nature, I think. Because the air is 70% nitrogen, right? Or 78 or something. And so they need these bacteria to help them grow. And then the squash provides shade for the soil, keeps the moisture in because they've got big leaves.
Yeah.
And they've also got quite spiky leaves and stems, which deter predators. So they all keep themselves going.
Wow, helping each other.
Exactly. And they can boost yields by up to 100%. So
guys, we have a lot to learn from these plants.
Damn.
They also, the three sisters, they contain all 9 essential amino acids, which are the ones that we can't produce ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are 20 amino acids that we know of. And so, it was just this amazing example of like history and tradition and like human ingenuity. At some point, someone realized that these plants all helped.
Yeah, and they probably didn't really know why for thousands of years.
So anyway, I thought, can I make some squash? So
I
roasted some pumpkins and then boiled them down with some sugar and mashed them up a bit. So I made a cordial out of butternut squash.
Oh, nice.
And then I thought, hang on, how can I extend this? And I thought, you can make whiskey out of corn. And so I've made you all a Three Sisters whiskey sour with aquafaba from Arico beans, which are native to North America.
Jack!
I'm skeptical. I'm sorry. Like, I think this is the wrong way to go about inventing something to eat or drink.
This is
to be like based on a pun. It's the same rules for format development. Don't come up with the pun title first and then try and work out what the TV show is. In the same way, like, don't come up with the name of the food and then try and make a food. That's not going to work.
You're going to drink your words. I think it's going to be delicious.
And the cocktail itself is American as well. So this is one of the most American drinks I can imagine.
Cheers.
Cheers. To the sisters.
I mean, I don't know what it is. It's not bad, but it's not...
I think maybe more sugar.
Mm. Yeah.
What?
But have you ever had a whiskey sour? Because they are quite sour. That's the
it's not a million miles away from a whiskey sour.
I like it.
Yeah. You say that about everything.
I wouldn't buy it, but I like it.
Anytime we give Manu this cup of whiskey, she's like, I like it.
I like it.
But there is a mythology behind the Three Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
In 1779, there was a Seneca chief called Handsome Lake.
Oh, great name.
And, sounds like a variety of pumpkin.
It does. He was old man. He was ready to die. Mm. And he was part of the Haudenosaunee people who live around the Great Lakes. And they were being killed by the Europeans, let's be honest. So he was a bit depressed. And then he had this vision. He felt something brush his shoulder and he turned around and he just saw corn. And he was like, that's a bit weird. And then he turned back and he heard a woman's voice. And the woman spoke to him and said, like, she and her sisters were worried about the future and that he must keep the mythology of the three sisters alive.
Oh, so they were the personified...
They were the personified three sisters, yeah.
Corn.
And they're known
I bet they looked fucking amazing. Like, I'm imagining, like, the muses from Hercules.
Yes. Anyway, so he returned to the living and decided not to die and to sort of spread the... I mean, the three sisters were widespread all over America, but he was sort of charged with keeping the culture alive
and
not letting, and not letting the Europeans squash them, which I think they basically
squashed.
Squash. But yeah, I just think it's a wonderful example of how, like, the old way is often the best. I mean, you can't really scale it up and make it commercial. So monocultures now do exist in our sort of late stage capitalist society. But if you've got a little plot somewhere and you want to grow some food, then this is quite a good way to do it.
It reminds me of in Regent's Park. I can't remember what it's called, but they basically have a small garden that you can go visit.
Okay.
It's something you kind of not notice if you don't know it's there. But it's a series of allotments. And it was actually set up for one of the wars as a kind of example showroom garden to show people how they could turn their gardens into places to grow their own food,
like the ideal home show.
It was literally that. It was the like less than ideal garden show, I guess, because like it was like the Blitz or something.
The best you can do.
It was the emergency garden show. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing there a couple of months ago. They had some examples of intercropping, but also sacrificial planting, where you plant like lettuce that will lure slugs away from a more valuable thing that you're growing. Or you could also, if you plant like radishes or broccoli, will attract and trap flea beetles so they won't go for your other crops. So that's another thing you can do.
Like the scapegoat.
Sacrificial. Yeah. That's so cool.
Less fat on the other part, Well, thank you for that, Jack. Is Halloween like in need of an official drink?
Oh my god.
It's promising, but I feel like actually...
Yeah, that's true. It could be the eggnog to Halloween.
Yeah.
I suppose the pumpkin spice latte, which again we might come on to.
That's fair. I was going to say, do even American people eat the pumpkin pie that they make for Thanksgiving and stuff?
Well, according to the American Pie Council, which is and to be clear, that is a council about pie that's in America. It's nothing to do with the films. According to the American Pie Council, you should fuck your pie.
Oh, wow.
No, it's America's second favourite type of pie.
Oh, interesting.
After?
Cherry.
I'm saying, apple.
Apples, apple.
As American as apple pie.
Yeah.
Come on.
Obviously, pumpkins originate in Central America, but I struggle to think of a more closely associated vegetable with the USA. And to a lesser extent, Canada. But like, it's just such Americana, you know?
And the problem is, I think their president right now looks like one.
Gonna get cancelled.
Get a little wig for this one.
90% of the pumpkins grown in the US come from Illinois.
Really?
Yeah. Like, Illinois, it calls itself the pumpkin capital of the world. They process about 80% of the world's canned pumpkin.
Okay, well, I'm not particularly surprised because it doesn't export, really.
I was going to say, we don't need that.
But you know that all the states, they need something to write on their sign when you drive in. And it's like, biggest producer of canned pumpkin.
I mean, that is still quite impressive. Again, I found it bizarre that Americans don't have any savory pies. I mean, that is obviously a huge exaggeration, but like, when we think of pies, they could be sweet or savory. Mm-hmm. Like a meat pie is quite common.
Yeah, they do put beef in their trifle sometimes, though, of course. In America as well, like, it's kind of a culturally, there are some other pumpkin themed events that go on. So there's Delaware. In fact, Delaware used to host an annual Pumpkin Chunkin' Championship event.
Where
teams
that?
Competed in a pumpkin launching competition.
Oh my god.
They were shot almost 5,000 feet into the air from an air cannon.
Using what?
5,000 feet?
An air cannon.
Is this in rural America?
Yes.
Where there's nothing else to do? Okay.
No, Central Park.
But it was cancelled in 2017 after there was a tragic accident.
Oh my god. What's 5,000 feet in metric? 1,600 metres. That's almost a mile, isn't it?
Well, mile high pumpkin.
There is one still going on called the Windsor Pumpkin Regatta, which is an annual race held in Nova Scotia, which is crazy. They competitors have to travel 800 meters in a pumpkin down a river. So you basically have to grow really big pumpkins.
An enormous one.
Hollow it out and turn it into a boat.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool.
So good. People love a pumpkin regatta. Like, there's a famous one in Belgium. There's one in the UK. Yeah.
Sorry?
Regatta.
Regatta?
Regatta.
Oh, people love pumpkin regattas, darling. no, but there's a dude who's famous for growing big pumpkins called Tom Percy. And he was talking about his experience rowing in a pumpkin. And he said it was horrendously painful because it was all mushy and freezing. Oh, and he was like, stood up on his knees. And he said, I was in agony the whole time.
Yeah, of course.
Don't ever do it.
Yeah, don't they also spin? It's like a coracle. You don't have a rudder.
Yeah, they're really, really unstable.
It's hard to like get it going the right way.
Should we talk about how big they grow? Because they can be absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Like, this is ridiculous.
They are some of the fastest growing organisms in the world.
Really?
Which is really cool. Really? They can reach over 450 kilograms in 4 months. So that's over 22 kilograms a day.
That's unbelievable.
Which is a lot.
But a lot of that is waterway, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they are 90% water.
They take up loads of water.
They're such a thirsty fruit. Like, they're not environmentally friendly to grow in this way.
So they grow as fast as some of the world's largest trees. The biggest one has just been grown by two twins called Stuart and Ian Patton. Theirs weighs in at 1,278 kilograms. And Ian said he had an inkling this might be the biggest one when their forklift started beeping and going mad and like flashing red.
Are these guys Brits, by the way?
Yes, they are.
They're Finally, we've done something.
But yeah, theirs drank 492 liters of water a day.
A day. But that's just like your hose is just, I guess, got to be on.
I know.
We're so worried about AI data centers. We should be worried about the giant pumpkins.
Maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
so we think they're going to change the world, and then Mark Zuckerberg is going to rock up being like, guys, I just broke the record for the biggest pumpkin.
Like, the electrodes in a pumpkin.
Okay, time for our second lunchbox, and that is me. And I have brought some, well, I have a real basic bitch.
I love it.
Obviously, how could I not?
I know, Lisa.
A selection of pumpkin spice coffees.
Amazing.
From I've got a pumpkin spice latte, an iced pumpkin spice latte, a pumpkin spice frappuccino.
Yes,
and then I've also got pumpkin spice donuts.
Oh my God.
Which I just found on my way back from work.
So great. Can I have a bite?
Smashed up. Yeah, go for it. Pick one.
Wow,
enjoy.
Thank you.
I'm going to go straight for it. Dig in.
There we go.
Yeah, so I brought these because I just thought we had to address the crazy trend of pumpkin spice that has exploded onto the scene. What do you think? What do you think you can taste?
I would say I'm getting ginger and cinnamon and a bit of nutmeg, maybe.
I was going to say
very
nutmeg.
Good.
Tastes like gingerbread to me.
Is there any clove in? I'm just saying winter spices now. Anise.
You've got it in one. Like those are the four spices that make up what we think of as pumpkin flavour, the pumpkin spice. But it's often, not always, but often, no pumpkin at all.
That's amazing. Oh. So presumably this comes from the American recipes for pumpkin pie, which presumably, because it's a sweet dish, you have a base of pumpkin puree, which is quite a mild flavour, and then you spice it up with sugar and the spices we mentioned, cloves and... ginger and nutmeg.
They say like garam masala is a specific blend of spices. Pumpkin spice is like white girl Ugg boots garam masala.
Yeah,
is that like, okay? Got it.
Like
exactly white girl Ugg boots garam masala.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. But yeah, it was. It's just such a massive craze, and every year it comes around, and it like it's the best selling drink in Starbucks and
PSL Day, right?
They've really
So I was reading a paper written in 2015 by Jordan G. Lewis, who's a psychologist at Penn State University, and he wrote that we probably like the PSL, the pumpkin spice latte, not because it is tasty, but because it is limited edition.
Oh.
And that drives...
So it's entirely psychological nonsense.
Exactly. So it kind of marks the time of year, and we know it's only going to be around for a certain amount of time.
I mean, that could be true of all Christmas food.
That's exactly true.
I mean, I don't believe that, but like, I think maybe I would agree that that's like, that's why people go crazy for it, because we love a tradition. And we love a...
Maybe slightly more sort of middle class and British, but I get excited for asparagus season every April. But
I'm the same with mini eggs. Yeah, I'm like, it's mini egg season.
Yeah,
finally. the crop's been reaped from the fields. Yeah. The local farmer who's like, it's here, it's here.
But I mean, the point still stands with either pumpkin spice latte or asparagus. It's kind of, I like it marking the seasons. I know you can get asparagus all year round with our globalized food supply chains, but I just enjoy the kind of, oh, it's spring. It's clearly spring because it's got such a short season.
We've talked about this before. Like, there's something in, if there's abundance of everything, it's like kind of makes everything a little meaningless.
I know what you mean.
And it's obviously a massive luxury to sit here being like, oh, we have too much of everything all the time and there's not enough choice. But actually growing seasonally and picking, you know, stuff up. What was PSL Day?
PSL Day is the day where Starbucks, I think, and possibly other chains in America launch there. It's the start of the season, basically. It's the first day that they start selling pumpkin spice products.
That's when you throw your windows open and go, you there, boy, what day is it? And it's like, tis pumpkin spice latte day, sir.
Oh my God. Traditionally, it's the last Tuesday in August, or at least it has been recently.
And that's so like biblical.
But in 2023, in Chicago, it coincided with the hottest day of the year. It was 37 degrees. What's that, 105 degrees or something? And actually, interestingly, the Starbucks guidance is that you should serve your hot pumpkin spice lattes at 120 degrees. So it's basically almost as hot as a pumpkin spice latte. But pumpkin spice spam?
No.
Yeah, they.
No. Well, that's the British version.
Spam did pumpkin spice spam in 2019. I actually tried to source a can, but they don't make it anymore.
I'm so glad you didn't.
Bless them for trying to get on the bandwagon. Time for our third and final lunchbox this week, and that is my sweet Manu. See, I can do an impression of Rosie.
Well done. It's like she's here. So. This week, I have brought a gourd flute.
Oh my God.
Which is exactly what it says on the tin. That's it is a amazing gourd attached to a bamboo flute underneath.
Wow.
And the whole thing together makes a beautiful noise.
To describe what Manu has brought up, it looks like a child's recorder made of wood.
Yes.
Just like shoved up the arse of a squash.
That is, yeah,
much
that is
clearer.
Exactly
right? Right? That is that gourd at the top there is like hollow and dried out.
Yes.
It's almost wooden.
It's a dried gourd called a calabash.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm, which is in the same family as the pumpkin. Would anyone like to try it?
I would love to.
You have to blow really hard into
it. Jack, you play the trumpet, don't you?
I do.
You should be able to pick this right up.
I don't want to usurp your fact, but I've brought my own calabash.
We have two, I brought a
different type of calabash. It looks actually quite a lot like a butternut, but it's West African rattle.
Very
so we can
nice
make a band. Oh. Alex, where's your instrument?
I can use a pumpkin as a drum.
Oh nice.
But yeah, I will play this.
Okay
go for it.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Oh,
that's
this
so
one.
Good.
Yeah.
So it does. It can do two tones.
Wow.
There's a
So
you're picking it up quickly.
I love it. So this was lent to me by my old flatmate Dave, who is a trumpeter and an excellent musician.
Cool.
And he found it on his travels in China.
Wow.
And can he play it well?
He can actually play it
better than me.
A tiny bit better than you. I've seen videos of people playing it where they like change the tone by pressing the flute on their knee as well, which is really cool.
Did you say he was your old flatmate?
He was my old flatmate.
Do you reckon he'll play something for us if we ask him?
Absolutely.
We'll play it at the end of the episode.
So yeah, this the calabash has got loads of names. It's called a bottle gourd, a white flower gourd, a long melon, birdhouse gourd, New Guinea bean, New Guinea butter bean, Tasmania bean, Opo squash. It's basically one of the most useful gourds in the world. When it dries out and hollows, it becomes a really good container.
Yes, for liquids.
Exactly. Yeah. So people store water in it. They store all sorts of foods. It's a really good drinking and eating vessel as well. So it's found all over the world. But we think it came from Africa, even though it's found in America. And there was a whole debate about whether it came from the US or not. But scientists have done loads of DNA testing. But back to this gourd flute, they're usually found in southern China. So Yunnan, and there's a particular kind of ethnic group called the Dai, and they're really famous for playing beautiful halusi music. I would recommend just like googling any of them playing. It's really, really nice.
We'll have to drop a link on the socials.
Yeah. But yeah, it's also not the only instrument that is made from a calabash. Jack has beautifully demonstrated this with his rattle. But loads of musical instruments are made out of calabashes. Oh, wow. The one I was most surprised about that I've never thought about was the zitar.
Yes, I've seen a zitar with what looks like a big old bulbous thing at the end.
Zitar like a kind of guitar?
Yeah. Like the Indian style.
Ravi Shankar.
The bass of the zitar is a gourd.
Oh, they're both gourds. Because I'm picturing one like on the strings. Yeah.
So there's a really beautiful documentary called From Gourd to Chord on YouTube.
The major
so,
gourd.
So good.
Brilliant pun.
Where they go through the whole process of growing the vegetable to making the zitar, and it's so beautiful.
And they purpose grow these in a certain shape or something.
Exactly. So like a certain size, and then they kind of hollow them out and they store them in water for ages. So they like cure in a certain way.
Oh, wow.
And then just the process is beautiful. Like it takes a really long time, and there's really ornate carvings.
The reason they use a gourd is for resonance.
Exactly.
Okay. Like the body of a guitar and a cello.
Yeah, or like drums. Yeah. There's loads of drums made out of gourds.
You could have a whole orchestra made out of
Can. And there is one.
It's right here. And they're here tonight.
No, they're called the Richmond Indigenous Gourd Orchestra. From
Richmond upon Thames.
Virginia, America.
Richmond, Virginia.
You got very excited. You're like, I'm joining.
they wear gourd hats. All of their instruments are made of gourds. I think they're available to do gigs and weddings. So
available because no one's booked them.
Yeah.
But there is also obviously the famous Vegetable Orchestra.
Yes, the London Vegetable Orchestra.
Exactly.
I read about.
Yeah.
Have you seen their hits?
No, I haven't.
They've got such punny names. So they do Green's Sleeves. not so good.
Okay.
But they also do Michael Jackson's Billy Aubergine. So they're fresh vegetables, so they've got like squash trombones and carrot flutes and stuff.
They're fresh, alive.
Yeah, and then they chop them up and make a soup out of them at the end of the day.
Saliva-filled soup.
Yummy.
One member of the London Vegetable Orchestra, Faye Treacy, did an interview and said, I used to make quite a lot of butternut squash soup from the orchestra's leftovers from the instruments, but now I hate butternut in my food because they play so many gigs and they just have to autumn's our busiest time of year, surprisingly.
So good.
That's when all the good vegetable instruments are in season.
That makes sense.
The kora as well from West Africa, you know, the really beautiful kind of stringed instrument. It's really tall.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
That's made of a
gourd. Is it bowed?
No, it's plucked.
Oh, plucked.
So that you kind of sit and the gourd's between your legs.
Yes, I'm picturing
it's
it.
It's so nice.
Did you read about the Peruvian gourd telephone?
No.
It's 1,200 years old. Archaeologists.
Is that like a...
This is going to be cans on a stick, right?
Yeah. Basically, it's like
Well, come on, guys, it's 1,200 years old. It's not going to be like a working iPhone.
It's exactly that. It's like, you know, when you're a child and you put like a little piece of string through a can and then you can like hear each other.
Wow.
And it's 1,200 years ago.
Wow. How long?
Yeah. How long is a piece of string, Jeff?
40 kilometres.
Whoa.
No, I'm kidding.
For a second, I was like, what? And also, how do you ring it? Like, how did someone know to pick it up?
Well, you can make a rattle, maybe. Just pull on the string.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Pull on the string and then it makes a rattling sound.
This is just like a spitballing blue sky thinking podcast. We've come up with so many products. Yeah.
Okay, that is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yes, and you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes and questions by emailing us, lunchbox@qi.com.
And we will leave you with this. A scientific study in 2010 tested the effects of different scents on sexual arousal in men.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most potent combinations turned out to be the mix of lavender and pumpkin pie.
Wow.
However, all men were aroused by everything to some extent, including the odor of cheese pizza, baby powder and parsley. So
oh no, baby powder, no.
We will see you next week. Happy Halloween. And to play us out, here is Dave on the gourd flute. Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Manu Onrio, and produced by me, Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.